Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant, Sweet Tango Apples, guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
On the northern slopes of Mount Fuji, the volcanic soil is covered in a vast, dark forest. It's said the trees grow so thick, with their canopies interwoven into a lush green blanket, that even in a downpour, a hiker might not need an umbrella. In some areas, it's said the roots of the trees grow in such a way that they look like they are reaching out and almost seem to writhe with dark intent. The forest is known for its almost complete lack of sound. No birds, no insects, no animals making forest calls. When some people walk into the primeval undergrowth, they immediately report feeling isolated and anxious, enveloped by the strangeness of the oppressive atmosphere. For years, Japanese authorities have posted signs on the forest edges, warning of the dangers of becoming lost within the shadow-filled woods, and urging those who are contemplating entering while under the dark influence of thoughts of self-harm should turn back. This case file joined the theorists as they follow the breadcrumb trail into the phantasmal forest in the foothills of Mount Fuji in Aoki Gahara Forest.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 241, Aoki Gahara Forest.
Nailed it.
I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
I was just sweating all day.
Thinking about having to get the number right.
I was putting side bets on the over-under if you're going to fuck that name up or not. And I think I lost some money.
Yeah. It's, those following along, I'm now 2 for 2. The last two words, hard words I had to pronounce.
Has he turned a corner?
You did really
and is hooked
did
on really phonics degree?
I'm impressed.
Aoki Gahara and Forest? Those are the two words?
Yeah. 2 for 2.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So before we get into this one, we just want to do a little disclaimer at the beginning. Tonight, we're going to touch on some pretty heavy subject matter. We're not going to give it a lot of time, but we're going to definitely touch on it. And before we get into it, just wanted to reach out to anybody that's listening that might be struggling with any thoughts of self-harm or, just maybe struggling and need somebody to talk to. And just let you know that there's absolutely zero reason to suffer in silence and to be alone, because there are resources for you and there's help. Mm-hmm. And if you are having those struggles, please don't stay silent. We could give you a few numbers for the Canada Suicide Prevention number, 833-456-4566. And then there's the international number, 1-800-273-TALK. And you can also text 45645 and go to suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Those are all resources. So, absolutely utilize them. They're there for a reason.
100%.
Yeah. All in agreement.
Unfortunately, everyone knows someone who either has or knew someone who has taken a life. And yeah, it's never something.
Taking a life? I think it's
taking their life.
Taking their own. Yeah, well, yeah, in his vampire circles. In his vampire circles. Yeah,
you just let it, let it slip there, Zell. Yeah.
Did that slip?
Yeah.
Well, look at this guy.
We all know someone who is taking a life. I'm like, wait, not me.
Hey, look, the guy's practically glowing. He had a fresh pint of blood in him. He's probably fresh off the kill. Let's be honest.
Look at that smooth skin.
Yeah.
Right? The wrinkles are gone.
That's forever 29 right there.
Yeah. Wow. Forever 1829.
We're talking about Aokigahara Forest today. And I think most people have probably either heard of this. This is the this is also the Ron Pond fan pick for this month. Every month on our Patreon, we throw out a poll at the beginning of the month. And you get three topics to vote on and what we're going to talk about. And this is the one that everyone chose. It was pitted against two other topics. And it squeaked out. It was like by two votes, I think. Like there's two votes that beat another case file. Because you know, the bastards probably voted for this one because they know we're going to say something to get us canceled. Just no. Just
want
no.
us off the air.
Fuckers.
We're always one step from the edge.
It is probably one of the most infamous forests in Japan. It sits at the foot of holy Mount Fuji and is also known as Jukai or Aokigahara Jukai, also the Sea of Trees. The forest actually sits on a plateau of a lava flow at an altitude about 900 to 1200 meters on the northwestern slope of Mount Fuji, and it's in the southern part of the Yamanashi Prefecture in Japan. Now, some parts of Aokigahara are actually a nationally designated national treasure and also in special protection zones of Fuji Hakone Izu National Park.
Now, so if you're wondering if you've heard of this forest before, you probably have. I would say, like, famously, it's called the Suicide Forest, and one of the more famous incidences in pop culture in recent memory is when—
bring this putz up?
Yeah, is when that YouTube putz filmed a body in this forest.
One of the Pauls? You know, they look the same to me.
Not only did he film a body that he stumbled across, but he, like, proceeded to make jokes about how awkward it is and snicker and laugh. Like, the most off-color, tasteless fucking thing I've ever seen.
Well, listen, you know what? Like, I'm not defending that, but I was like, it was a weird thing to post.
Absolutely.
Dude, those they do anything for clicks, man.
Listen, the only thing less entertaining than that video was his fight with fucking Mayweather.
I didn't watch it. Was it not a good fight? Yes.
Oh, God, no.
Wasn't it like the greatest? Greatest fight of all time.
Absolutely not. It was a fucking sideshow. Besides, yes, it is very, that is, it's probably most well-known factoid about this forest that is also known as the Suicide Forest. A relatively large number of suicides have occurred within the boundaries of Aokigahara. That can probably be attributed to, at least they say that there is a popular book that was written in the 1960s. It featured two teenage lovers, pretty much Romeo and Juliet style, snuffing each other in the forest along with another book.
Romantically.
If you can call it Romeo and Juliet is still fucked up. Like, absolutely. I will die on that rock. The more you think about it, you're like, this is dumb as fuck. I hate this thing.
A couple of 14-year-olds killing themselves. Like, not good.
The Leo DiCaprio movie is pretty good, though.
Great.
Is that the one where they got guns?
Yeah. Yes.
And John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's still, that holds up. I think it's still pretty good. And so you have this as well as another book that was published after that one.
In case the subtle
references in that other book about suicide weren't enough, maybe this one a little bit more clear, I guess.
More straightforward.
Yeah.
Does it say go to the forest and kill yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a chapter on that.
The full title is
The Handbook.
Suicide Manual.
Yeah, the complete suicide manual written by a Japanese author.
Wataru Tsutsuri.
Lists out a number of places that would be the best for suicide.
Okay, not only does it list places, it gives you, I think, up to 11 methods, up to most effective to least effective. It ranks them as far as cost, emotional toll on your family members. Like, and this is a real book. Big Theory Productions Incorporated does not endorse or promote the purchase or reading of this book.
No. Definitely not. I can stay as far away from it as possible. Now, besides that, Aokigahara Forest is actually a pretty interesting place aside from those things. Like, even though it's most popularized for those, the dark deeds that are done there and have been, are now inextricably linked there. It has become, sadly, a part of the forest that you actually have to have authorities sweep it out, have an annual sweep every year to go in and look for people who have taken their own lives.
And they've actually, like, since as of 2011, they've stopped counting the number of bodies that they found because they didn't want to, like, popularize it, make it more of a polarizing thing than it already is. But, like, the last year, 2010, they tallied 200 suicide attempts with 54 casualties.
So crazy, man.
Right? Like, and that's within the last year. But I think something that we really need to, like, make clear too, right? Because this is especially the subject matter, this was very shocking reading it, right? It was hard to digest, but you kind of need to understand that Japan has a little bit, like, historically has a little bit of a different attitude towards suicide that really stands in, like, a stark contrast to what, you know, those, like, especially, like, the Judeo-Christian societies and stuff like that. I think that's important to...
The view, like, what, like, more honorably sometimes?
Well, in some circumstances, like, I would say
the idea of what is it? Seppuku.
Seppuku.
The ritual suicide of, like, samurai days where it's kind of glorified. It has been glorified in some aspects of Japanese culture. And it's kind of hung on to that. Like,
yeah. Well, it was seen as a way of atonement.
Yeah.
Right? So it was more of an honorable way of going out, especially, like, within the military ranks. Oddly enough, like, the special way of, like, seppuku, the harikari method of committing suicide, was only reserved for samurai and noble people. If you were not, you had to do it in less honorable ways. But that kind of just shows you how honorably they considered it. Like, you have to be this honorable to kill yourself in this fashion. And then you go back to even with World War II, with the kamikaze pilots, right? Like, that was honorable. Right?
Going out, dying in battle was always seen as a preferable way to go out.
Well, I mean, Independence Day glorified that too.
Death before dishonor. But, like, and you think this is, like, pretty, potentially, like, pretty archaic, you know, ideas. But you look back at it, there is this expense scandal with a cabinet minister, Toshikatsu Matsuoka, who took his life in 2007, and the former governor of Tokyo described him as a true samurai for preserving his honor. Yeah. Like, that was in 2007.
Yeah. So it's still, the vestiges of samurai culture still, all those veins run deep
throughout
Japanese culture. But aside from that, you do have a lot of cool features about Aokigahara as just a singular, as a place just that is unique the way that it has actually grown, like its natural environment. So the forest floor is actually made of volcanic rock, which is just cooled lava from, apparently there is a massive eruption in 864 AD. And the stone there is hard and porous and full of tiny little holes, which... give the forest this one of its notable characteristics.
The spookiest characteristic.
of being able to absorb sound. A lot of people who go into this, almost every single person that walks into this forest, the first thing that they say that you notice is the lack of sound.
Like, no birds chirping, nothing.
Yeah, eerily quiet. And some people say, like, if you got lost and you were, you know, a couple hundred yards from... like other people, they might not hear you yelling. Like, the dense forest and the makeup of this just absorb that. If we recorded there, it'd sound way better than we're in.
Yeah, they say it's because, like, yeah, the makeup of the foliage, like the moss on the mm-hmm. forest floor is so thick and, like, porous that it mm-hmm. acts as, like, an ultimate sound absorber.
Yeah, and that on the ground, like, this, another unusual characteristic of Aokigahara is that the soil is only about 10 centimeters thick. And so what happens is that you have, even though it is very fertile and it's very good for trees, like that volcanic soil,
because it's so thin, the roots of a lot of the roots of the trees, the way that they grow is that they grow out sideways almost.
Oh, so they burrow down till they hit the rock and then jet out.
Right. And so you get this, if you see a lot of pictures, you know, pull up pictures of Aokigahara, it gives it this very primeval, spooky appearance with all of these, you have all of these roots like climbing over each other, forming little bumps and hills.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. When I looked at pictures, it's beautiful, but I was like, man, this looks like Mirkwood.
Did Tolkien visit Japan before he wrote those?
Yeah, because that's what it looks like.
It could be the inspiration. Looks that, like it could have just fit right into that movie, no problem.
Another really cool part.
They literally tell you, they're like, do not, like, even like advanced hikers and outdoors people, they say, do not wander off the trail. Mm-hmm. You will get lost.
Or if you do, you have to leave ribbons or some type of markers as you go.
You got to Hansel and Gretel it.
Yeah.
Yep. The Aokigahara Forest is like, even though it is spooky and it is a place that has been known to be the site of a lot of, you know, suicides and these things. There are sites within Aokigahara Park, like that area, that are hot tourist destinations. There are places that there are places for school trips, field trips, and things like that.
Just go water skiing, zip lining.
It's popular for fucking like anatomy and biology fucking classes.
Okay,
decomposition stages. Right?
Yeah. Aside from that, you also have these pretty neat set of caves. There's one called Narusawa Hyoketsu, which is called the Ice Cave. Now, the Ice Cave is located on the east entrance of Aokigahara. And so about 1150 years ago, during year six of the Jogon era, 864 AD, you had this giant eruption occur. And with the, it exploded out the flank of Mount Fuji. And then all of this lava descended down into between all of these other tiny little volcanoes and then created this two-tunnel cave system. Now, it's about 156 meters long, and with like these two, it's almost like a figure eight when you look at the formation of the caves. And what's pretty neat about it is that the average temperature inside these caves is usually between 0 and 3 degrees Celsius. Ice formation takes place within the cave year-round.
Those stalactite fucking icicles hanging down everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like the groundwater like seeps through and actually freezes. And so they said that since that time, when the cave was discovered and they had these ice and stuff like that, they would actually use it as a natural refrigerator from the Edo period. And ice would be cut from inside the cave and taken to the shogun.
This culture, fun fact, actually, this culture is the first one to refrigerate beer.
Oh, there we go.
I mean,
I think.
I'm pretty sure.
I'll be honest with you. I feel like that would end up like decreasing the fucking suicide numbers, though. They'd be happier.
You spit that fact out so believably. I was like, interesting.
Yeah, of all people, Zell would know.
Yeah, that's right? Figured, like, yeah.
And
also, had a couple pints there.
Also, according to Toho Films, within this cave is the frozen body of King Ghidorah from the Godzilla films.
Which one's that?
Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, giant monsters all out attack. That's the entire.
But which one's King Ghidorah?
Yeah, he's the three-headed golden dragon.
Okay.
Yeah, that one.
And he's frozen down there as well.
So according, you know, you have this like super spooky forest. Eerily creepy, silent. You have some sort of naturally forming ice cave that's frozen all year round. Naturally, with something like this in such a, you know, story-rich culture, there's bound to be some folklore and stuff that goes along with this forest.
Well, not only that, like Japan. And Japanese people are like very dialed in when it comes to fucking like supernatural. Right? Like I remember reading not too long ago, I'd have to look it up, but there was an elected official that they were offering him like, you know, like
you know, the prime minister gets a free place to live. The president gets his White House. Like, he was given a place to live. And he went in there and he's like, can't do it, boys. Like, this place is fucking paranormally activated. I'm going to need somewhere else to live. And, like, he wasn't scoffed at or anything. Everybody, all the Japanese people were like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the former prime minister.
Like, and that's real. He's like, yeah, you know what? We should probably condemn that fucking place.
I don't think twice. They're like, yeah, this place is haunted. I'm out. I'm going to move.
Yeah, you can't rearrange that furniture enough to make that place positive. Like,
what happened?
Fuck out of there, man.
Ghosts.
Yeah, actually, you know what? There's ghosts in that one, so I'm going to need a bigger one with a pool, maybe.
Less ghosts. Yeah. I'm okay with one or two ghosts.
Yeah.
After that, I'm out.
Yeah, one of the facets of folklore that actually deals directly with Aokigahara is there's local legend from Buddhist folklore that has that Aokigahara was the place where people once practiced what is known as Obatsute, which is the act of
granny tossing.
Yeah, essentially.
A.K.A. Well,
granny tossing, granny dumping.
Well, isn't it like, I know Okasan is mom and Obasan, I
Obasan's
think is,
like old lady grandma.
Yeah, Obasan is grandma. So it's like Ubatsu is.
It's
grandma. It's grandma dumping. Like, that's basically comes from the fucking name.
Yes. And it was the practice of taking a elderly or sick family member into a remote area and leaving them to die, which is like, that's not like isolated to Japanese culture. I'm pretty sure other cultures have had that as well.
Well, here in Canada, we call it pillow therapy, but.
Yeah, I find cheaper. It absolutely disgusting and despicable that, you know, a culture would do this. You need to abandon your grandparents in homes so they can be abused by strangers until they die. That's the right way to do it.
How about a warm glass of shut the hell up?
That's the Canadian way.
Yeah. Right? Get back to sewing those wallets.
Your fingers are sore?
My fingers hurt.
Well, now your back's sore. You just got landscaping duty. I read that and I was like, oh, that's bad. And then I was like, well, I'm pretty sure like all of our senior homes
are just awful.
Wiped out in Canada. It was terrible.
They literally had to bring in the military to help during COVID. Cause when they saw the conditions of these places, like as someone who unfortunately frequents these places, it's fucking horrible. It's like,
let me tell you something.
One
Del Boca
member.
Vista isn't all what it's cracked up to be. No.
Anyway, but this practice from what I read was, usually the grandparents were like, I'm old and weak, especially in times of like famine.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, let me pass on so like my family can live. And then it was like an agreement that, I don't think they weren't just riding up a horse and kicking grandma off. And
yeah, but listen, we got a book
away.
For you. We got a book here for you with 11 different methods that don't include starving to death. There's way better ways of fucking taking care of this. Like, why would you let them go and slowly die a painful death?
From the folklore, it is reported, like, it says that this practice was meant for, like, times of extreme shortages. So famine, disease, these kinds of things where families were struggling to support even their healthy members. So resources-wise, you just had to let them go. There is kind of, I would say, there is a poem from Buddhist folklore that commemorates the story of this practice.
Is it a haiku?
I don't know. Nice. It's not a haiku. Is it me? But I actually thought it was.
I remember always choosing those when we had to write poems in school. I was you had to choose a haiku. What is it, like 3-2-3?
5-7-5?
5-7-5. Yeah.
But way it is, I find it kind of poignant. It is, it goes like this. In the depths of the mountains, whom was it for the aged mother snapped one twig after another? Heedless of herself, she did so for the sake of her son. So. It's said that like this poem is commemorating when a son was carrying his mother up through the forest, she was snapping off twigs and leaving them behind so he could find his way.
Yeah, get real. Grandma was snapping those twigs. So when the sun dropped off, she's like, fuck this. I've got to save myself in this situation. Find my way out of this forest. Let me ask you something. Who wrote that poem? Probably the son. Right?
Same. Yeah, it could be possible. Now, so with this storied piece of folklore and the large amount of suicides, it has always been kind of, it's inevitable that Aokigahara would be long associated with ghosts, right? And one ghost in particular known as the Yurei ghost, which actually is, it's actually, there's, a lot of different types of Yurei's, but like Yurei is like one type of a subset of ghosts, I suppose. You have Yurei's and Yokai's, which is like, there's a difference, but I'm not.
Which one's the grudge one?
The Yurei's, it's an on, technically that would be a an Onryo is what the grudge is. So
don't like that.
Right. No. So according to Shinto tradition, all of us, all people have a god within us. So technically your soul, like your spiritual being within you is encased in your fleshy prison.
And it's trying to beat its way out your entire life.
Pretty much. And so when you die, your god frees itself, or kami, or whatever they want to call it.
My mongoose god.
When a family member dies in Japan, living relatives usually, the living relatives have to watch over this spirit. So there's an entire religion kind of dedicated to taking care of spirits and making sure that they have a successful transition into their paradise, into the afterlife. Because like once you die, you don't automatically go
to... Are you saying... Here, that ghosts that are become like
malevolent.
Malevolent. Thank you.
Hey, he had two in a row. Number three, couldn't do it.
Two for three. They're just ghosts that weren't taken care of. They're like bad kids. So it's like it's not on the kids. It's not the ghost's fault. It's the caretakers. So it's the family. They didn't obviously weren't caring for this ghost.
Well, yeah, it's just that there's a set in rules of rituals that need to be observed in order for a spirit to pass on to the paradise or their idea of heaven. So if that doesn't happen, your kami or the god that is within you can become malevolent or charged with negative energy and can cause harm to people or even do a lot of different things, apparently, or a lot of abilities are attributed to different types of yurei. Now, the religion that deals with this is called Goryeo Shinko, and this is... When your spirit passes on to paradise, then they actually become a guardian spirit. So if you don't take care of the spirit, it becomes vengeful. If you do raise it, it's kind of like a Tamagotchi, I guess. I don't know, whatever. and you go, it goes all the way in and it becomes like a little guardian spirit. It evolves. I don't know. Like you turn into...
So if you feed the spirit its whole life, nice positive energy, it bursts forth upon death and guards you. If you do the opposite, it haunts your dreams forever.
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
So you'll see a lot
to get haunted.
Some of the traditions include things like giving a spirit a Buddhist name when you die. So that once you transition over, you cannot be inadvertently summoned back by your earthly name. So when somebody dies, they're given usually a Buddhist name. Sometimes you'll see pictures of gravestones, which I learned that actually in Japanese gravestones, that's the family gravestone. There's just one.
Yeah.
Most of the time, according to Buddhist tradition, like everybody's cremated. So they have like a family one. And then sometimes they'll put these wooden markers behind, which will have the Buddhist names of people, of those who have, of the deceased. And so these Buddhist names allow them not to be summoned back inadvertently, like pulled back from their transition or pulled away from that, allowing them to make an easier transition over into the blessed afterlife. As you would. So... The word yurei actually comes from the kanji yu, which means dark, and then rei, which means soul. Dark soul is pretty fucking metal. Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah,
it does.
Now, a yurei is normally characterized by they have this long black hair and they wear a white kimono. And
because they're normally women, because women are more emotional, I think, is what the...
Usually I think there's a disproportionate amount of yurei who are women.
It is, and it's because they're more emotional. I literally said that.
I mean, hell hath no fury like a woman's scorn. So I mean, that it kind of fits, I suppose. Another interesting little aspect of yurei ghosts is that they usually don't have any legs or hands. Like that's something that's usually remarked on is that they don't.
Yeah, because those are hard to draw.
I suppose
we talked about that before.
And so if you very much if you think of a The Ring, which is a Japanese movie, The Ringu, that is pretty much like an archetypal ring. You got the girl with the long black hair hanging down, the white dress, the white flowing dress. That's very much like what you would consider a yurei. Now, a yurei is like a set of whatever and a set of mythological paranormal being, but there are different yureis within that categorization of ghosts.
Like different levels of evil here? That's what we're talking?
Pretty much. Yeah. Each one is associated with a certain kind of subset of things that have happened to them or what causes them to become a ghost. So you have...
And they kind of exhibit different traits depending on how they die.
Yes, exactly. Right? So things like the first one is called the Goryeo. So you have the Goryeo, which is I guess literally
this guy with six arms. You fight him before you fight fucking Shang Tsung?
Yeah.
Is that right?
No, he has four arms.
Four arms.
The Goryeos are literally translated, means noble spirit, which are usually ghosts of the aristocratic class.
The Aristocats.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
O'Malley. Usually have hilarious. Suffered some type
good joke.
Of agonizing death or been slighted at death. One popular legend of a Goryeo is one Goryeo called Shintokami. He's also known as Tenjin. And it's said that after the years of following what was an unfair murder, this specific Goryeo caused things like thunder, heavy rains in the capital city, caused fires, floods, all kinds of natural disasters. Usually Goryeos are the most powerful of the yurei. And so now they'll cause all kinds of havoc and wreak all of this stuff within a certain area. Usually,
this is what you're like dealing with whenever you play Sim City.
Yes, so it is a force.
What do you call it? A natural disaster.
Yeah, when everything starts going to shit, you got tornadoes, earthquakes. You know, Godzilla comes up out of the water. This is you can thank a Goryeo.
And in order to appease this ghost to cease the torture that the city was going through, the emperor was said to have burned the official's letter of exile. I guess he had been put into exile. He actually had to burn that. And then he had to promote him post-mortem, had to give him a promotion in the afterlife into another up from Baron to Duke, I suppose. Yeah, had to give him like a promotion in order to get them to
I will now die in peace.
And they also literally made him a patron god of poetry, calligraphy, and justice.
Wow.
Hmm.
It sounds like you just bribe them.
Yeah. If you're having problems, if you're having paranormal problems at home and you're got a ghost, hey, have you tried promoting them?
Promoting them to meaningless titles?
Yeah. Have you tried giving them new titles that not necessarily, Duke? Maybe it doesn't have to be a vertical promotion, just a horizontal, you know?
Yeah, like a lateral. Right? Yeah. A lateral promotion.
Yeah. It's no problem.
Right? Move them into another role.
Change of title, give them a 1% raise.
Yeah. Assistant park supervisor.
Well, something above inflation.
Assistant two.
Just at least something that, you know, compensation above inflation. Like maybe. Yeah.
I'd love that. You're on a Ouija board having an interview with your ghost to promote him.
You're negotiating with him like as you're going across. We mentioned before.
We really like what you've done here. So we want to offer you a promotion.
He's like, what about the company car?
To the addict. To... Right to the top floor in the attic. Ooh.
PTO.
Think about all the stuff you can haunt up there.
Like we mentioned before, one of the other big ones is called the Onryo, which are vengeful ghosts usually that have died having a resentment towards someone or something. So these ones are the bigs that are big in J horror movies that you see in the Grudge, The Ring.
Yeah.
These are also kind of known as Jibakure, which they're ghost tied to a specific place. But these ones are also known to have a type of curse, which is called like Tatari, which can trap those around them within a certain area.
We just got level 20 wizards left and right. is what these ghosts are.
Very spooky ghosties. Yeah. And these are kind of the ones that
these aren't just your they're not just your Caspers. You know, they're not just lurking in the closet.
No, they ain't friendly.
These guys are looking to cast fireball from the skies and blow up your whole family. That's what it sounds
when
like.
When you start to look at the like what happens in Aoki Gahara, it's, you know, people believe that like when a person dies of a sudden or violent death, that it caused them to become a Yuri. Is that how I say it?
Yuri.
And they can, certain types, like the ones we just say, will transfer their rage and like their torment onto people. And like people always say, like going into this forest, you get like feelings of dread, anxiety, for no reason. Just being in there is creepy. The ambient sound, it's like,
apparently the trees soak in negative energy.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where I start to think that, like, you know, if you have this place where, you know, people go and they do terrible things and kill themselves and these spirits are lingering, is there a chance that these Yuri, I fuck it up every time.
Yeah.
Right? Like as you wander into these woods, that they're, because maybe they regret a decision or something, but these ghosts would then put those feelings onto you, those negative emotions and negative feelings. Cause I think we can all agree that you've been to a place where you go and you're just like, man, whatever is going on here, like some weird energy is going on. I feel it weird. Like there's been a couple places I can think off the top of my head, like the Killing Fields, the weird forensic hospital in Bangkok, a couple places where you walk in, you're like, oh, something's off here. I don't know what it is.
Like there's a lingering negative energy and you like feel it as soon as you like approach it. Like,
Yeah. And the reason I was kind of thinking about it in this perspective is because there's a lot of bodies that never get recovered from this forest. People just go missing and they're just presumed to have committed suicide. And one of the things that I always found interesting about this is that, you know, we talked about, the son carrying the mother and then breaking the branches so he could find his way out. Well, hikers and stuff, when they go in, will leave ribbons, but so they can find their way out. But a lot of reports say like, don't follow those ribbons because you're likely to find a body at the end of the ribbons. And that kind of aspect of it kind of was, I was like, well, I mean, I guess you never really know what's going through someone's head. But to me, it's a weird thing that you would place those ribbons to try to, like, you're like, oh, this is to find my way out. Or if you just want to find your body, I guess. But it was a weird thing where I'm like, you know, and lots of times people would go and it's like they're tenting stuff is there. I'm like, I kind of wondered, I'm like, you know, is this some David Paulides thing where there's something, you know, maybe these people going missing in the woods, not all of them can be chalked up for this because some go missing and are never found.
They get absorbed by the
literally
trees.
Literally the best place for a serial killer just to hang out.
Right. Well, now, because I was even reading that like the locals can tell if you're a tourist or you're summoning someone there to maybe not necessarily kill yourself, but like explore the option, they can tell right away. So if you were, as you said, like a serial killer, that would be, you could just like, people go there as tourists. You could go walk around the forest, follow the ribbons.
Well, and then you find a dead body. You're not going to be like, oh shit. Like you're going to be like, oh, that's sad. Somebody killed themselves again.
Yeah, you went there for it. It's so weird.
Or it'd be a great place to dump bodies, I'd imagine.
I think there are rumors that that Yakuza
sure.
do dump some of their bodies of
why wouldn't you?
Probably murders have happened.
Fake a suicide, put a suicide note in the vest pocket.
Usually I think they find one. Some of the notes are usually, they're like written on cardboard and they're like nailed to a tree is what they usually kind of do. Usually leaving about like what time.
Or are they those fucking dolls that they nail to the trees?
Yeah, there's like a picture of a doll that is, there's some people have interpreted as that being some kind of like knock towards society. These things, it is a, yeah, there is a whole kind of culture behind it. It's kind of
like, but my thing is like, I'm saying like, you know, if we've talked about it before on the show, like the Call of the Void, right? Where it's, you look over the ledge and you think,
what if?
Jump off, right? Just fucking jump off. See what happens. Head first. Truck passing, right? You drive behind a logging truck and you're like, I'm going to stay right behind this, final destination style, right? That like weird, like it's a known thing. There's a term for it, right? It's, we've talked about before on the show. And I was, while I was reading this, like knowing that this is like the second most popular place to commit suicide other than the Golden Gate Bridge, I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if in there's certain places on Earth where the call of the void is just stronger than other places. And if like, if these ghosts or the Uri that are in here are like tortured souls that are kind of giving off that torment and those negative feelings, if you walk in, they're already like, you know, in a bad place, like, and then you start to get those overwhelming feelings on top of that. Like, can we chalk it up to weird energies in these places that can do that, that give off that, this weird phenomenon that we don't know a lot about?
There's also apparently quite a substantial amount of like measured infrasound going through the forest as well.
Like it's like sub, so sound sub hearing, like frequency is so low, you can't actually identify it.
But Dead I mean, Mountain like, style.
Most of the people that do end up committing suicide, like there has to be a means, right? Like they have to go there with a method, right? And I think like the two most popular methods there is like pills or hanging, right? So you would need tools to bring with you to do those things, I imagine.
I'm just saying I get that people would bring tools, but I'm saying if before you entered the forest, you were harboring doubts about doing it, maybe entering the forest basically gets rid of those doubts.
And just get,
like
the, just,
right? Yeah. Like yeah. They become like, because like a lot of accounts I've read of people going in there minus the, you know, they're like, it's actually stunning, but it's also super eerie. Like you get a weird feeling being in this forest. It's creepy. It's eerie. And you go in there and you get these feelings on top of that. I was making connections of going, I wonder if some of these places are just more prone to that. And then when people go there, I wonder if people would get those
same feelings if they didn't know that this place was also called the Suicide Forest.
Like if it was just completely out of the zeitgeist kind of thing.
Yeah, like if you had no idea, I wonder if you'd get those same like ominous feelings when you went there, as because like obviously you would now. You know, there's a stigma attached to it, right?
But like, that's the other thing too. It's like, you know, we've talked about before that, you know, the power of conscious thought. Now we have everyone going like, that's the Suicide Forest. They're putting up signs like, don't do it. Right? Yeah, like right as you're going,
think of your mother, think of your father, think of your kids.
Don't do it. This we've now like put basically all of our brain power into being like, this place is, there's, you know, there's, that's what it is, right? And that's what it's for, right? And I'm sure if you were standing on the edge of that forest and you watched someone hike in, you would think to yourself, I wonder if they're going to commit suicide in there, right? And you're kind of giving into that negative energy of the forest. It was just a weird kind of thought process I went down this afternoon when I was daydreaming about it.
No, definitely. It's a...
not suicide, the forest in this case.
Don't visit the
just
forest.
Just clarifying. Yeah.
All right, we got more to talk about, but before we get there, we're going to take a short break, grab a beer, and we're going to be right. There it is. Right back.
Look, are you like Dan and you got a trip to Thailand coming up and you want to impress the locals? Well, then you want Rosetta Stone. It's been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 different languages offered. It's got fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. Rosetta Stone has amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
Sure, there's competitors to Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta Stone offers more languages and a lifetime membership. You could go over to Babbel and get 60% off, but it's not for a lifetime. That's why we're promoting Rosetta Stone today. All right, Theorites, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Alien Theorist Theorizing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your damn life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today or look for the link in the show notes. Peace.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Woo! I had a thought on the break. You know, we were talking about the infrasound running through the force, and you know, perhaps we've talked about that before with the Kamar Taban incident, and you know, obviously Dyats have passed about, you know, the wind resonating off the mountains, the way it creates some sort of infrasound that's causing these issues. The other one I was thinking of was, like, we talked about the Golden Gate Bridge is the number one spot where people commit suicide. And there is a, you know, like an eerie hum associated with the Golden Gate Bridge that they've tried to identify and they've tried to, you know, stop it. And, you know, people claim it sounds like singing and stuff. But I wonder if these sounds, like, we just don't know of enough about the frequencies they're hitting, or maybe the wind's pulling off these structures or the porous holes in the suicide forest, and that is causing some issues, that whether we know it or not, right?
Like drawing people to these areas, you think? Like,
maybe, or just giving these people negative thoughts, right, when we're there. Like, because if you think about the Kamar Taban incident, infrasound was one of the theories that these people all just went crazy and started committing suicide. If you remember that one in the
Saman Diatsov Pass, was one of the theories that the infrasound made the
drove them all crazy,
and they
right and they took off their clothes and ran in there. But like we in the Kamar Taban, like some were headbutting rocks, right, and stuff like that. It makes me wonder that if there's something to this infrasound where wind hitting things certain way will cause this frequencies that just do that. Maybe it's something that we just don't understand
so,
yet.
Maybe you show up to the bridge. Let's say you have these thoughts of self-harm.
And they're just amplified.
But maybe you don't intend to do it. Maybe it's like, maybe a lot of people would look the other way, but this infrasound is like interfering with their reasoning skill or something.
I mean, a big thing too with
or impulse control.
Aokigahara is like, a lot of times you're finding these bodies in advanced stages of decomposition. And you got to think, like, do they do autopsies on these bodies? Probably not. So you have no idea, really, unless you find the noose around their neck, right? You have no idea how they died.
Well, right? There's so many. They say there's so many bodies unaccounted for.
Exactly,
so
many, right?
Just like missing people.
You have no idea.
It's probably this.
So maybe
we really have no idea.
Yeah. So maybe there are a large amount of bodies that, like, people that are dying in ways that we have no idea how, and that could explain that.
That's strange.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, if you wanted to go a little bit of a different direction, there is...
Does this have to do with aliens, Dan? Because I've been waiting for aliens.
Maybe. there is a tale from Japanese folklore known as the Tale of the Bamboo Cutter. Now, if you view this tale through a certain lens, you might find it sitting right inside... what would be considered our wheelhouse of aliens or alien theorists or theorizing.
Ooh, okay. Right?
So this tale begins in a one day in a old bamboo forest, and there is a bamboo cutter, as this is the tale of the bamboo cutter, and he comes across a mysterious shining stalk of bamboo.
Ooh.
When he cuts this stalk of bamboo open, he finds an infant the size of his thumb inside of it. Now, I mean, if you've ever been
inside... Baby?
Pickle baby?
Just a pickle baby?
Now, he takes this infant home, and they raise it as their own. It is a living being, and they raise it as their own, and it grows into a girl. And as they're raising this girl as their own, the bamboo cutter and his wife, from that moment, every time that this man cuts open a stalk of bamboo, he finds a small nugget of gold inside.
Good deal. Good deal.
So it's a pretty sweet deal.
Does the girl grow or is she still tiny?
She grows.
Like full size?
Fast. She grows and it is, I think it's preternaturally fast. Like she grows fast. Really fast. Oh, and within a short amount of time, about 3 months, the girl who they've named Kaguya, grows into an infant, from an infant to a woman in 3 months' time. And of ordinary size, ordinary proportions, but also extraordinarily beautiful.
Oh, so the dad's like, how many goats can I get for her? That kind of thing.
Well, not exactly, but they actually
gold nuggets, man.
Oh yeah.
they do become rich, but the bamboo cutter is also, they try to keep Kaguya away from everybody. They try to keep the secret of her, like they try to keep her away from being noticed by those who might covet her beauty. But, despite his efforts, she attracts many suitors and there's about five that make the cut. Now, these five are all like, they're all nobles of certain standing and they all are dead set on making Kaguya their
fighting
their
to the death for her love.
Well, not fighting to the death, but Kaguya devises five impossible tasks for them to complete. And if they complete these, then they will make them.
At 3 months old? Wow.
Yeah she's really advanced.
It's advanced.
Yeah, those are some crazy cognitive abilities.
Now, each noble tries to complete.
My kid's going on 3 years. They can't even shit in the potty yet. Yeah. All right. 3 years.
all five of the nobles fail in their assigned task of what they're getting them. So none of them gets to marry Kaguya. But the Emperor of Japan finds out about Kaguya and decides to visit. And when he meets her, he instantly falls in love with her and asks for her hand in marriage. Now, Kaguya says no. Even the Emperor of Japan, not good.
Friend zone the Emperor?
That's not going to end well.
No, daddy's going to get his head cut off.
But she tells the Emperor that I will not marry you, but they do pretty much, she does essentially, I guess you could say she friend zones.
Yo, man, because I'm 3 months old.
They maintain correspondence.
I'm a baby.
What do you want from me?
They still maintain correspondence. They do write to each other, write back and forth to each other. And, but what the parents notice is that every time Kaguya now sees the full moon, her eyes fill with tears and her parents become increasingly worried about her and she starts to exhibit this erratic behavior and it becomes, it gets to such a point that eventually, they say something to Kaguya and Kaguya reveals that she is not of this earth.
What would have told you that?
Excuse me?
That she's got Benjamin Bhutan syndrome here.
Yeah, honestly, it's shame on her parents for even being surprised at this. They found her in a fucking bamboo stalk.
She grew to the size of a thumb.
In 3 months, they're like, what? You're not from Earth? Oh my God. I'm like... Andrew would have had her in a pickle jar within a week.
Absolutely. Number one good price, buddy.
She tells her adoptive parents that she is of the moon and that her people live on the moon and that she must return to them. Now, there are different versions of the story, but in some versions, she's sent to Earth. And the reasoning that she's sent to Earth is that that she is... she was sent because of some type of punishment, as a punishment for some type of crime that she committed, or that she was sent to Earth because there was some type of celestial war going on.
They're trying and
she
was to preserve. Sent to Super. It's like Superman.
Yeah.
Except for they didn't blow up the moon.
They didn't blow up the moon. They got away with that one.
Yeah.
Got lucky.
And the gold is explained as part of it is part of her was sent with her in order to pay for her upkeep. Like it was sent to help her. So
we're going to instill these nuggets of gold in these bamboo shoots for taking care of our alien daughter.
Parents got a pretty good deal, man. They're getting gold nuggets. Their daughter's going to marry the fucking emperor. Like, all right, come on.
Not bad gig.
Yeah. Could be worse.
Yeah, they're going to travel the countryside, showing off the moon, baby.
Now, side it gets show even... style.
Yeah. Rick Dyer of Japan.
There comes a day where Kaguya says that she is going to, her people are going to come and retrieve her and take her back to the moon. And as that day approaches, the emperor sends his guards to protect her, to prevent her from going with the moon people. And, but when they get there, when the celestials arrive, the guards are blinded by a brilliant light and they can't do anything when this happens.
Solar flare.
UFO.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Coming in.
UFO coming in hot. I mean, if you think about it, like it's a blinding light, which it causes missing time that you're paralyzed and you can't do anything.
Sounds- this is like, yeah, it sounds like abduction cases that we hear all the time.
Now, before she leaves, Kaguya writes a note of apology to her parents and the emperor, both of them, and she gives her parents her robe as a memento. But she also leaves to the emperor a small vial or a small amount of what is the elixir of life, of immortality. And she attaches that to the letter to give to the emperor.
Was that in a bamboo stalk?
it's part of what she has. Like the secret of immortality is what they said.
She just conjured it up.
Why, she knew how to make it? Or had
it's
it?
A bottle of bath water. That's what it is. Emperor's a freak.
Now, another interesting part is this is how apparently when they see her leave, as she hands this letter with the piece of the elixir of immortality to the guard, it's said that the moon people, her people that have come to retrieve her, they place on her shoulders a type of what looks to be like a robe made of some type of feathers. And that when she dons this robe, all of her compassion for the people of Earth, all of her sadness at leaving disappears. She becomes completely
blank. Neuralized. It's a neuralizer Bing. Coat.
And so the emperor orders his men to take, even though when he receives this elixir of immortality, he finds that he's not able to bring himself to take it because he does not want to live forever without Kaguya.
He'll get over her. Take the elixir.
Take that shit
Guess what? If you die, there's no chance of you ever seeing her again.
And so he takes the elixir and he has his guards burn it on top of Mount Fuji. And there, the smoke can see rising. So that is what
some an idiot.
isn't like Mount Fuji's name, doesn't that have to do with like endless life? Isn't that the translation?
It has a couple of connotations.
I wonder if that ties into the story.
Oh, maybe.
I believe it does because they say that part of this is what people used to explain that when Mount Fuji was a little bit more active, centuries ago, there'd be a lot of smoke rising from the volcano, from the caldera and things like that. So they would use this as part of it. They would offer this as an explanation.
Maybe that's how they get the fucking formula for endless life is due to all the fucking sacrifices. People are called to Mount Fuji, to the base of Mount Fuji, by the infrasound to sacrifice themselves to produce this fucking elixir to keep people alive forever.
So the aliens, what you're saying here, just hypothetically,
what I'm saying,
the aliens have put some type of spell on this area in order for people to come and sacrifice their life energy. So the aliens...
Could be technology. It doesn't have to be a spell necessarily.
Well, technology... It's magic.
Isn't the ground like a high amount of iron?
That is what
it does have
as well.
Yeah, we didn't actually say that. They do claim that it's because it is an old volcanic region. There is a lot of iron there, and it will
fucks because all of the stuff too.
Compasses and GPS can be affected by the area itself.
So, I'm not so much sure about GPS, but like the compass part, I find is that's.
I'm just going
with the internet. Either way, Zell, you're on to something. Here, listen, vibe with me. Continue.
The aliens have, for lack of a better word, cast a spell. It could be technology, but it's something.
Either way.
And the reason the aliens have done this is for humans to come here to this area, sacrifice their life energy so these ETs can live forever. And that is the elixir of life.
Absolutely.
That's what's happening here.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, that could be it.
The interesting thing about this bamboo cutter story, what's the other one? I remember us talking about another one where the girl's like in an acorn.
Are you talking about Utsuro Bune?
Utsuro Bune. Where it's, she's found on the shore with its strange markings.
That's Japanese as well, right?
Yeah. So it is interesting that there's a tale. You know, they have a rich culture of, I'm not going to say they have a rich culture of extraterrestrials, but like if you read between the lines on some of these stories, well, this one, she says she's from the moon, extraterrestrial. The other one, they didn't know where she was from, but it's an interesting thing that you have a lot of these kind of things that tie into like abduction stories that we've heard about. How many times have we heard about like extraterrestrials have a fascination with gold, right? That's something that they look for. And now it's showing up in bamboo stalks here. Part of me was wondering that if there was something more underneath, like the lava when Mount Fuji blew in 864 AD or whatever, that maybe there was some sort of, ancient structures there that, or reactors or something that were basically destroyed and then covered, and that, the effects are still seeping through the earth through these pores in this forest, right? Because by all accounts, there's not a lot of wildlife in this. There is wildlife in this forest, but not a lot for how big it is. So I have to talk to some type of
biologist to let me know the diversity of wildlife in there. But it seems like it's just by the stories, like no one really hears. Either you don't hear the birds chirping because the sound is absorbed so quickly, so you have to be like pretty close to the birds. But whatever it is, yeah, it seems super eerie. Like you go to this place and it's just
It would be very, because like even for animals, they like birds that chirp at each other, like it would be hard for them to communicate, and it seems like it would not be a good place for a lot of wildlife.
There is wildlife, like there's bears squirrels, everything like that, from what I remember reading.
Yeah, some small stuff. Yeah, it does have, I'm pretty sure it has. Which has a pretty good abundance of wildlife. That it is, yeah, it is a normal for all
foxes, intents and rabbits, bunnies.
They got bears. It is a normal forest.
Asian bears aren't real bears.
Yes, they are. They got bears.
They have that. It's like the sunburst bear, like the big wide face.
Yeah.
Those things fucking maul people.
Maybe there's some tanukis in there. You don't know.
It's not a bullshit panda bear, man. It's a real bear.
Yeah, it's. It is like a normal forest. That is not normal because it is unique in the way that it grows.
Normal in the sense that
how people go there and kill themselves.
Well,
at an astronomical. Yeah,
normal in the sense that it has trees and moss. Unnormal in the fact that a high percentage of people.
It's littered with dead bodies.
It's a centralized place of human exiting this planet.
Sacrifice.
And people travel there. It's a destination to do that.
Well, that's like seems like more of a modern thing through the internet and stuff. The stories,
yes.
Podcasts like us doing a story on it, people hear about it.
I find the ice cave thing fascinating. Like, I find that
would be really
like,
cool.
That's not, and there's not, there's more than one of those. Like, that's not the one I mentioned. Like, there's two or three of those caves where it's cold enough for ice to form inside those caves year round. Like, that's nuts to me.
I'd imagine being on the site of an active volcano with prior eruptions like that, that there is probably tons of spelunking you can do, like caving, like lava tubes, like probably a really cool place for adventure if you're going.
Yeah. What's frozen in those caves?
King Ghidorah.
Sounds like the three-headed beast. Don't go in those caves.
Kaiju, that's what's down there.
Don't wake him up.
I told you. Or demon samurai warriors, according to some Japanese manga I've read. it's one of those ones.
But this forest also is like, if Mount Fuji was to ever have a serious eruption again, this place is vaporized.
Toast.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wild place.
It's a place that I would go visit. I wouldn't feel too spooked, but I would be like, I'd want to visit just the fact that. I think the absence of sound, like that characteristic of it just absorbing sound, the ground being able to do that and the way the vegetation grows would be super interesting to me. I mean, at just being able to sit there and be like,
it's like that, like a natural place like that is like, cause it's not the same thing. There's like something called like a, I think it's called like an anechoic chamber, a place with zero sound reflection. And so these are like purpose-built rooms, and most people can't, people can't handle more than a few minutes inside,
right?
Because you start you just feel the sound, you can't hear anything,
right? And you hear all of the sounds that your body makes,
the whooshing of your blood, like the creaking of your like everything.
S1 and S2 sounds.
You just can't. So yeah, but so I'd imagine being in a place like is it similar when there's a heavy, deep, fresh snow outside. Acts as a huge sound absorber.
I love that. Like I love. I, like for me. Like I personally love that. Like that.
It's everything sounds so dead.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
I probably would sit in Aoki Gara first, and I'd be like, "This is amazing." Yeah. If,
I feel like this is great. And then you know what? You'd sit there, Dan. You'd sit there, and then you go, "I want to stay here forever."
Because you've been trapped by the alien spell. They're trying to suck your life force.
Yep. Right, and then I marry a moon.
That's
lady.
How it begins.
And then I marry a moon lady, and I'm cool. Like.
You went to Bud. She's turning on the Emperor, Bud. What do you think that is? How many gold nuggets do you have?
What's the Emperor got on me?
Probably about fucking 3 inches. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We're talking about the Emperor of Japan here. He's probably shorter than Dan.
Come on.
Let's be real. Emperor of Japan is probably 5'4".
Dan's getting friend zoned for sure.
Jeez. But is the Emperor. No, wait,
Dan's a really nice guy.
Maester outranks Emperor. Everybody knows that.
I don't know.
All right,
fair. We'll give Dan this one. Dan will
ludicrous.
Will bed the moon baby.
Yeah,
and be the emperor of the world.
You heard it here first. Dan loves 3 month
emperor of the moon.
emperor of the moon. That's what Dan's going for here.
Emperor of the moon.
And pedo, but that's
maester of the moon.
Yeah,
moon maester. There we go.
It's got a good ring.
Moon maester.
Moon maester.
Love it.
Anyways,
But that was the Ron Pond. That was the Ron Pam. Monthly pick. If you know, if you want a different topic, or you thought that one wasn't super cool,
it's your fault.
It's your fault. It's your fucking fault.
Yeah, you fucking blew it.
You picked
your fault. Well, also, I was gonna say, if people want to be able to get in on the fun and get to see what the topics are and get to pick, you know, you get on our Patreon.
Oh yeah, do that too, and then you get your voice heard, and you can you know. Correct the course of the show if you want to.
I usually try to keep the topics at least as diverse as possible. It's usually like a paranormal, alien, and cryptid. Usually I try to keep one on there, and
Suicide Forest is once in a while.
Suicide.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Andrew said at the start of the show, it's never too late to talk to someone. So
reach out.
Don't
suffer in silence.
Reach out. And if you're not supporting the show and you want early access, ad-free, bonus
stuff.
See
you another week.
I'm an idiot.
Theory of the week.
Theory of the week first.
Got handsome Zelf. He's missing cues, man.
You know why? Because 5 years ago, we didn't do this. That's why. He just went back. He regressed.
I just regressed 5 years.
Hey, listen. We did a Cosmic Channels from 2014 last night, I think.
We did.
So
something's happening here.
We're going back, boys.
We're stuck in a time loop.
Theory of the week goes to Anna B. Anna B sent us a very heartfelt email. It was very nice to read. Asking if, you know, she wasn't sure if we see this. We see all emails. When you email us, message us, one of the four of us reads it.
We hear all.
Yeah, and one of us will see it.
If you don't get a response, it's because Andrew got to it first.
Yeah.
I didn't even see the email.
Yes. See what I mean? But thanks, Anna, for the kind words. You know, if easy way to get Theory of the Week, send us some kind words, nice heartfelt email, you know, that heartwarming, or a 5-star review on
any podcast. Are you going to read the
email? No, I'm not going to read the email.
Well, I want to hear it.
I'll show it to you after. It's too heartfelt.
Too heartfelt. Okay. Well, thanks, Anna.
It's too personal.
I'm excited to hear about it.
Made us smile.
Thanks. Made us smile. Thanks for supporting the show, Anna. You were the Theorite of the Week.
Hell yeah.
All right, Zell. That's your cue.
Now I push the button. Now I read the beauties who support the show. We'll figure it out. As I briefly said, early access, ad-free. The Patreon is the easiest way, the most direct way to support the show. We greatly appreciate every single one. This week we have Grimnar. It's a good character name.
Grimnar.
Xander Coates. Polly.
Hey, Xander Coates is a funny one because we chirped him because I guess his dad had donated more than him. We made fun of him, so then he matched his dad's donation.
That a boy, Xander?
Really?
Okay, yeah. Show him up. Yeah. Show the old man up.
Hey, just say, other Coates, he's now tied. You're tied now. Just saying.
Got to keep one upping each other. We have Polly Cesarez, Caitlin Johnson, Ashton Hilton went up, Corey Doran. What? This is weird. Caitlin Johnson subscribed both on Patreon and on Supercast. You should cancel one of those.
Wanted to make sure.
Anyways, thank you very much for supporting the show.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in the after hours.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.